Technology.ie number 56.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Brought to you by Black Knight, it's the Technology.ie podcast, episode 56 for February 14th, 2014, with Michaela Nealon. Ah, no.
That's okay, keep
wrong
going.
Wrong year, 2013, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Mwinachon. Happy Valentine's Day, Michaela.
Happy Valentine's Day, Conor.
Very good, how are you?
Not too bad.
Good, we've got a date with each other for the evening. Let's make the most of it.
I don't think I even want to respond to that.
But it's been a while, Michaela. We have to catch up on so much. Where have you been?
I've been in Amsterdam. I've been in Los Angeles. I've been in Vegas.
I've been in County Clare.
Well, it's a long way from Clare to here.
It is to Carlo this evening. Well, it's good to talk to you, Michaela, and great to catch up again. On Valentine's Day, did you notice the Google Doodle this evening? We were preparing for the podcast, at least I was supposed to be, doing my homework, going through links and things like that, and I got totally... It's not often it happens, but it did this evening. I got distracted by the Google Doodle. A tribute to George Ferris. I didn't know there was a George Ferris, but I suppose if you thought about it, you'd assume the Ferris wheel was called after somebody.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of... You know, it's one of these things. I mean, back, you know, years back when Google started doing those doodles, they were very simple. There were little graphics and there was nothing more to them. But they've got increasingly complicated over the last while.
And elaborate. Have you been playing with this one? Have you seen how it works? There's different things to click on and stuff.
Yeah, I was playing around with it a bit last night because they rolled it out as countries moved into February the 14th. Hmm. And, you know, you could try it out on, you know, google.ie and before that you could try it out on google.fr and .de and .gr and all the other, you know, different country codes that had, you know, moved into February 14th, an hour or 2 hours or more ahead of Ireland. And, you know, it is pretty nice. Mm. It's complicated. There's lots of stuff happening. It's cool.
There is. I mean, they've combined a Valentine's Day celebration with it. People can go and check it out and they should do as well. They've combined a Valentine's Day celebration with a, what do you call it? A celebration of George Ferris, I should say, as well. So you've got two Ferris wheels. They're the double O's in the Google. But you click on this heart and it's like it runs a little roulette and it matches up, for example, a goose and a... tiger, is it, or something? You get to see how there's a little comic strip then that comes up that it's lovely. I think it's brilliant, so it is. And it's funny, I knew nothing about George Ferris and then I went and clicked and found out a whole lot more about him, and it's a great way. It's part of our culture really, and it's a part of our heritage, and a great kind of service, I think, by Google doing these doodles and celebrating people like George Ferris and what it's all about. People can go read about themselves as well, but I'm very, very impressed indeed with it. Also impressed, and I see you blogged it as well, traceroute 216.81.59.173. This is fantastic, Michaela. I can't understand why someone hasn't done it before now.
Well, you need to have a bunch of IPs to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't just kind of say, hey, I want to do this crazy ass thing with DNS and routing and God knows what else.
For those who don't know, this has been tweeted several times over the last few days, blogged as well on technology.ie. It's fantastic, of course. We know the famous Star Wars text which appears at the start of every episode, episode 4, A New Hope, and it goes on and runs through all of that. This has been done, of course, and it's been done brilliantly because it's... I'm surprised people haven't done this with maybe not just with the Star Wars stuff, but with other things as well. Anyone who's ever run Traceroute, it traces the hops from different nodes on a network, and there's a little bit of... actually, the text is what? It's the domain names, isn't it, or what?
They're the host names.
The host names, I should say, yeah. So, for example...
It's the host names for the various the various IPs along the way. So
the first one that comes up is 206.214.255.251.1, and the host name is episode.iv. And then the next one is a.new.hope, and it goes on just like that. it.is.a.periodofcivilwar, etc. It's lovely. It's really nice. I mean, it's really geeky, Michaela. It's kind of sad, really, I suppose, whoever.
Well, I thought it was quite entertaining, but yeah, I mean, it's using DNS, it's using PTR records, and you know, host records. Sorry, not PTR records, A records. So he created these A records, which are completely ridiculous, but due to the way he's done it, they do actually work. I mean, they shouldn't work, but they do. It's quite entertaining. It's geektastic. What more can you say?
Absolutely. It's geek-tastic. Social Wi-Fi hotspot, Michaela, you've blogged recently. What is this about?
Well, okay, if you travel a lot and you use data, which of course we all do these days with smartphones and everything else, you get hit with massive data bills if you're not careful. So there's several companies out there, including MaxRome, and this new one I came across called Karma, that offer Wi-Fi dongles that you can buy, and you can just load up data onto them. So instead of using your 3G or the 4G that you might get in the US, you'd have this little device, and it will give a Wi-Fi signal which you can use. Brilliant. But what's interesting about what Karma have done is that if you share your Wi-Fi device with other people, you will actually get you get 100 megs of extra bandwidth allocated to you.
Okay. What's in it for them? Why? Okay, I see why you'd share it. They're giving you an incentive to do that. Are you saying bandwidth? You mean connection speed, or are you saying data allowance?
Data allowance, right?
Okay. Yeah.
The thing is, a lot of the time when you're referring people to products and services, you know, it's word of mouth, or it could be some kind of affiliate program, which can be a little bit convoluted. With this, if you leave your Wi-Fi access thing open so that other people can see it, they can connect to it, they won't be using your data allowance. You'll get a free extra bit of allowance, but they can log in with their own Karma account or create a Karma account.
So it helps Karma to recruit new users. Is that the idea?
Well, yeah, that plus it also means, I assume, I haven't actually had a chance to try it yet. I assume it also means that if you're an existing Karma user and you don't have your Wi-Fi hotspot with you, you can log in and use your own account.
Okay.
But I just thought it was an interesting, kind of slightly quirky way of doing it, because most of the other ones, you know, it's a bit more convoluted, and, you know, they seem to work on the idea that the data allowance is like a monthly subscription or a weekly subscription, whereas Karma seemed to work on the basis, hey, you've bought this amount of data. If you use it in a day, a week, a month, or 6 months, that's grand. We don't care. You know, it's the data allowance that you're using, not the time that it takes you to use it, if that makes sense.
Interesting. And it's available in the US only, I think, isn't it?
Well, yes and no. You can only use it in the US, but you can buy the device wherever you want. So I actually ordered one the other day because I'm going back to the States again at the end of the month. And last time I was over there, I know I ran up a massive data bill very, very quickly, just with, you know, doing email and a few other things from the phone. So if I can save myself money by using this, then, you know, it's a win-win.
And this actually looks like fairly reasonable value, doesn't it, Michele?
Well, it's $79 to buy the device. They're charging $14 per gigabyte, which might seem excessive, and let's face it, it is excessive. But that's way cheaper than what you'd pay if you were on roaming. I mean, on roaming,
absolutely,
you pay way more. So that's, you know, so it's good in that respect.
And you can add to that that allowance by as you say, by sharing it. So for every new user who connects to your shared connection, you'll get some extra bandwidth, as well as they getting bandwidth that doesn't cost you anything.
Exactly.
Excellent. All right. So,
I mean, as I say, you know, it could be one of these things. Let's say, for example, if I was to go to a tech conference, just say hypothetically, say I was to go to a tech conference in the US, and there are a load of other Europeans there. Because I mean, obviously, the Americans won't need it as much, because they probably have data on their phones. So the Europeans, let's say 10 Europeans connect up, that's an extra gig of data for me.
Yeah.
Woohoo. But, you know, as I say, I just thought the idea was slightly different, was slightly quirky, a different take on how you do it. It's only available at the moment for usage in the US. They've rolled it out in New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Washington, Chicago, Houston, and a bunch of other places. So I'm going to give it a go and see how it goes. I mean, Paul got something similar from a UK company before he went over to the States, which uses a totally different network for the connectivity. But as far as I know, I'd have to double check with them. As far as I know, it's on a kind of a monthly subscription basis, which, as I say, it's a bit different and a little bit annoying in some respects.
Yeah, it's nice to think that you could go, say, on your trip and you have so much data in it, and perhaps it might be 6 months or a year before you go back again and you can pick up where you left off.
Well, yeah, that's something I like.
Excellent. Okay, you can read more about it. Social Wi-Fi hotspot, it's there on technology.ie. You've also blogged about about.me, which is one of the .me's, really, Michaela, that has really made a name for itself. And it's hit the headlines for interesting reasons in the last couple of weeks. They were snapped up by AOL shortly after they've launched, and they've gone independent again, bought themselves back.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I mean, it's not often that you'd find a startup barely launching and being acquired by a company such as AOL, and then turning around, you know, within what, 2 years, and going, hey, we don't want to be with AOL anymore. We've got the funds. We want to buy ourselves back. That's, you know, that in itself is pretty impressive. I mean, you don't see that happening. But the guys behind About.me are quite exceptional. You've got Tony Conrad and Ryan Freitas, who are the two founders. Mm-hmm. And you know, these guys, they're fascinating, wonderful characters. And so I'm absolutely delighted they're able to do this. We'll see at some point if we can get one of them to come on and talk to us.
Do you have any details as to what the deal was? For example, how much did AOL pay for them, and did it cost as much to buy the company back again?
As far as I know, the exact details haven't been disclosed. And I think, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, significant amounts of money, I suppose. That's probably all we really need to know. You know, there was a lot of money involved.
It's another case, though, Michele, isn't it? Really, of say a large company like AOL saying, let's grab this. This looks exciting. This, let's get in there before Google or Facebook or somebody else gets a hold of this. And they've bought something new and exciting and progressive and comes along with two founders who have big ideas and they're going to make something of it. But when the larger company buys this startup, again and again, this isn't the first time we've seen this. Often they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that was the case with About.me. I mean, I think, you know, About.me was growing its user base and was adding new features. But now that they're no longer under AOL, they're going to be able to add things a lot faster. They'll be able to roll things out.
But this is what I'm saying, Michele. It's not that it wasn't successful, or it's not that it wasn't making progress. It's that it didn't fit with the overall, if you like, corporate goals or strategy of AOL. You know, we've seen this again and again sometimes, that they jump in, but they can't quite figure out, you know, obviously they see the value in it and the value of it is still there. And I must say it's one of those things about .me, which, you know, and I'm pretty much immune to a lot of these kind of sites and that. But this is one that I've seen some very effective use of, and it's a good one for a profile page. It's a good one for somebody if you want to pull everything together in terms of your Facebook, your Pinterest, your Twitter, whatever it might be. This is me, this is who I am, and this is the main page for about.me. I presume you've got one, Michaela, yourself.
Oh, of course I do. Yeah. Of course I do.
What's it at?
Excuse me?
What's it at?
About.me/M. Nalum.
All right, okay. Sorry, go ahead.
It doesn't look that great at the moment, possibly because the background image I have on it is bloody awful. But hey, I mean, I kind of played around with it a little bit, but I hadn't actually logged in for quite some time. But I did poke around with it a bit over the last couple of days just to see, you know, what kind of new options were available and
what's the user experience like?
It's nice. It really is. I mean, they've added more things to it. I mean, it's very easy. It's user friendly. There's a lot of emphasis on what's the word I'm looking for? On the kind of the user experience, and they've done some nice integrations with other things, so that, you know, it's not just simply a question of, are you sure we'll have a load of links to other things? You know, they've done a kind of a nice integration. So let's say you can add your blog's RSS feed to it, and the last few blog posts you have will appear. You can optionally kind of do the same type of thing with a few other services, or you can just simply link to them. Hmm. You know, you can customize it quite a bit. You can change background images. You can change colors. But what's nice about it is that it does. It's like saying, right, okay, using these colors, how about you try these? Because they'd be quite complementary, or that kind of thing. So it's a bit more than just a simple, you know, edit your page, which you get a lot of the time. And I'm looking here, you've got, like, you know, backgrounds, you've got biography, colors, fonts, the various applications, links, what options you've made available for people to contact you. And you know, then you've also got a whole load of different ways of doing things, like adding your about.me page to your email, linking to it in a bunch of different ways, sharing it in a whole load of different ways, and also, you know, taking that into the physical world. They've partnered up with Moo to do actual business cards.
Is that a way that they hope to monetize, or are there other ways that they can monetize this, do you think?
I'm not 100% sure what the monetization strategy is. I mean, there's a few things you can look at and you can go, yeah, I get that. That makes sense. I mean, there's an email service that they offer, you know, get your email at about.me. You got the business cards, the emails, and what was the other one? Actually, those are the two main ones at the moment. So, I mean, I would assume, though I obviously don't know, that Moo must be giving them some kind of kickback for referring new users to them. And I would assume that with the email, which is actually powered by AOL, so I'm not too sure what's going to happen with that. You know, I would assume that, you know, you'd probably have upgrade options, you know, more disk space, get more features, you know, that kind of thing.
But as you say, Michaela, you think this will give them an opportunity to develop it further now that they're independent of AOL. What are you expecting, or what are you hoping to see?
Well, I mean, they've already announced a bunch of options. I mean, they've got stats and things like that, which they added in the last couple of days. So now you can go on to your about.me page and it'll tell you who last looked at it. Sorry, one second.
Sure.
You can get stats about who's been looking at your page. And they've made a few announcements, I think, about, you know, new features and things that they've got in the pipeline. I suppose what the thing is, what their vision is, that it will become you know, kind of universal almost. I mean, what they say is, you know, our commitment is to make about.me the web starting point for identity. Will be, if everyone will eventually have an about.me page they integrate into their email, add to their Twitter bio, or embed in one of their blogs. I mean, it's a bit like what a .tel could have been, but wasn't quite. So I think, you know, there is the option there for it to do some very, very interesting things. We'll see.
Sounds exciting, and I think that you know, it's a fair point. Everyone will eventually have an about.me page. Maybe not, but let's put it this way. An about.me page might be one of the unique identities, if you like, that everyone will eventually have, either an about.me or something similar to it. And they're certainly making a play for that. So it's interesting to see that. Ryan Freitas and Tony Conroy. You might get them on the show sometime, Michaela, you reckon?
Well, we'd have to twist their arms and see if we can twist Ryan or Tony's arms.
Very good. Very good.
And who knows?
There's this exciting Irish technology podcast. You've got to come on it. It's the place to be. You know who I'd like to get on, Michaela, would be Kim.com. One of the stories that was very much in the news in the last few weeks, of course, while we were off the air on a bit of a hiatus over the last several weeks, he's launched his mega site.
Yes.
So Mega Upload was the site which this guy owned and ran, and was shut down by the US government. And he's based in New Zealand. Was he always in New Zealand? I think he was, wasn't he? Or
I'm not sure when he moved to New Zealand. He's been there for the last couple of years.
So he's launched Mega, and what is that?
It's meant to be a place where you can upload files and store them in the cloud, essentially.
So it's Mega Upload Take Two, if you like.
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's. I think this time round, I mean, he's managed to garner so much publicity. I think, you know, it's and he's also got reseller partners, you know, or kind of normal companies and everything else. I think that, you know, he's trying for a different market this time round. I mean, trying to get to compete against the likes of Dropbox and other services. Mm.
Which have really come to the fore, I think, in the last couple of years, and it's amazing how, in fact, something I've noticed in the last couple of months, increasingly people I collaborate with have Dropbox accounts and are sharing folders with me. Google Drive, similarly, but not so much, but certainly Dropbox has made really got a lot of mind share, if you like, over the last couple of months. What's exciting, I think, about Kim.com, or what's newsworthy and noteworthy about him, I think, is the way that he has turned his celebrity status and I suppose his notoriety in relation to his difference of opinion with the US federal government. He's turned that cult of personality into a marketing campaign. There's nothing particularly, as far as I can see, Michele, nothing particularly unique or special about Mega, except that Kim.com is involved with it and he's made a name for himself.
I mean, there is definitely a lot to be said for that. I mean, he has used his status. He's used the PR, both the positive and the negative, to get people interested in it. And you know, the thing with Mega, I'm just actually trying to log on to it now just to have a look. Of course, I probably won't remember my username or my password. I mean, when it launched, it was a bit kind of like, well, okay. And now what? You know, it didn't really work. Didn't really work too well for me, or for anybody else, for that matter. I mean, what they're trying to push themselves this time is, you know, the privacy company, bigger, better, faster, stronger, safer. And the launch party that they held in New Zealand was completely off the charts. Mm. And it was, you know, it was very, very different, and he's very much pushing the entire thing about, you know, this is all based in New Zealand, you know, the US are out for me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I don't know, is it good?
Well, Michele, there's a serious issue there underlining that, because, for example, if I had files on the original Mega Upload, I'd be pretty fed up. You know, if I had been depending on those files, for example, now you know, obviously you'd want to have a copy of them elsewhere, but it just highlights the things. It highlights the whole issue in relation to cloud storage. If you had been depending, exclusively on Mega Upload, for example, to store particular files or data that you might have had, when those files and servers, when those servers were seized by the United States government, Michele, you know, you were out of luck, and there was nothing you could do about it. And that issue, I think, was a real issue for some people. It certainly, you know, as we increasingly trust services like Mega Upload or Mega or Dropbox or Google Drive or whatever it might be, I've got to say I've come to rely very heavily on some of those services, to know, for example, that photographs I take are backed up to services like that. To be honest with you, Michele, they're a lot more secure on Google's or Dropbox servers than they are on my hard disks at home, or indeed any backup that I could make in my own home. I'm a lot more confident of the likes of Google or Dropbox ability to protect my data. But again, what if, for example, the US government marches into Dropbox next week and says, you know, we're confiscating everything you've got? And what if that's the only backup I have of my family photos, for example?
Well, this is one of the things that, you know, a lot of people forget. I mean, you know, it's you have to be careful where you're putting your data. I mean, in our case, all our servers are based in Ireland. They're governed by Irish law. So the likelihood of anybody being able to march in and start seizing servers is pretty slim. But, you know, it's the kind of thing, you can never have too many backups. I mean, I've got a number of, you know, network storage things here, and I've got portable USB external hard drives, and, you know, if for something that's really important, I'll probably make multiple copies of it. But I mean, what happened with Mega Upload the first time round, you know, it was scary. I mean, they shut them down, and all the legitimate users were cut off at the same time as the, you know, illegitimate, illegal file sharers. So something, you know, you have to be wary of. And I think with Mega, while they might not run into issues since the launch, and within a few days, certain interests were attacking the company in a number of ways. I mean, going after the payments, saying, look, you know, this is another case of the same guy, you know, flaunting copyright infringement. This is not a good thing. You know, these, you know, you shouldn't facilitate them. You shouldn't help them. You should stop the payments getting to them. Hmm. So it could be interesting to see, you know, what happens in 6 months' time. I mean, there was a lot of interest with the launch. They supposedly got about, I don't know, 500,000 users or something. Up in the first 24 hours. But I mean, how many of those will actually stay around to actually pay? That's the big question.
That's the big question. We'll wait and see and see how that turns out. You mentioned yourselves, Michele, of course, blacknight.com, sponsors of technology.ie. You're the CEO of the company, of course. And of course, you've got some special offers. Seasonal offers for Valentine's Day. Michele, tell me what bemyvalentine.me.
But if you go over to bemyvalentine.me, I mean, we love cheesy. We love cheesy, silly domain and hosting offers.
You also like poems that don't scan. I love this one. Roses are red, violets are blue. We love domains. Buy domains.
Yeah, we kind of gave up. We didn't know what to do with that one. I mean, we just kind of, we'd have a bit of a laugh with it. Roses are red, so is .me, violets are blue, .co is orange. I know, it just doesn't work, does it?
Very good. Okay, so bemyvalentine.me. You've got special offers on what there?
We've got special offers on registering .co and .me domain names. And you can save big on them if you just register the domain and nothing else. I mean, you know, there's the special coupon codes. But if you buy a hosting package for a year at the same time as you get the domain, you can save a lot more. You can even actually end up with getting the domain names for free.
Get out of here.
Oh, yeah. plus. Added bonus, man. Added bonus. We're also giving people free badges.
Badges. Badges that you... What kind of badges that you wear?
Badges that you wear. What is it to do with a badge?
Like a little button. Like, okay.
Look, I'm just here. I'll send you a link on so you know what I'm talking about.
Great.
I mean, there's we actually got the guys in Spike Badges to do some badges.
Excellent.
Because that's what they do. So there's .co and .me.
All right, okay.
Black Knight Badges.
Okay, our Super Valentine's Day offer, now with added dragons and badges. Excellent. We'll post a link to that as well. And it's on the Black Knight blog as well. You can find out more about
it. We're letting it run over a couple of days after Valentine's Day. So, you know, by the time this podcast goes out and everything, it'll still be valid for a few days.
Excellent. Well, we'll put it out first thing in the morning, Michele. And while we're at it, a couple of more things I want to talk about before we finish up. A couple of weeks ago, I'm going to talk about House of Cards in a moment and Netflix and how hooked I have become on it. But mind you, I'm finished, but we'll talk about that in a moment. But if we had done this podcast 3 weeks ago, Michele, which is when I think the next one we should have or would have done would have been if we'd kept to our schedule, I'd have been talking about Vine and nothing else. It was the big news there about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Not too much talk about it now, mind you.
I think it's like everything. Something launches, it's new, it's shiny, it's exciting. Everybody talks about it.
Do you know what I thought of? Do you remember what? Seismic?
Yes.
Yes, Loic Lemur. Had this? Is that still going even, Seismic?
It's going in some form or other.
It's pivoted into something else, I think, hasn't it?
Well, the video element went ages ago. It became a desktop application for cross-posting to multiple social networks. Mm. And now, as far as I know, it's... it's been acquired by Hootsuite. Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, okay. So it's essentially a...
It's existing or it's dead.
Right. Well, it turned into a kind of a Twitter client or a social media, like you said, cross-posting type client, and Hootsuite, it's no surprise that it's gone that way. But Vine, Vine is different again because unlike allowing you to post, say, 5 or 10 minutes of video, Vine has taken the whole Twitter notion of 140 characters and translated that into 6 seconds of video.
Yeah, I mean, the idea behind it, it's kind of cool. But at the same time, I don't know. I mean, I've seen a few people using it, but I don't know. I'm not sure. I haven't had any real use for it, I suppose.
No, I mean, there was a lot of talk about it, and they were saying, you know, it's an example of how if we'd been talking about this, this is the first chance we've had since it launched, but if we'd been talking about it the week that it launched, we would have been more excited about it than we are. But it certainly doesn't seem to have made any great impact, at least in the short term. Is it owned by Twitter? It is, or it's integrated with Twitter?
No, it's owned by Twitter.
Right. Was it something they acquired, I think, or developed?
I think they acquired the company behind it.
The interesting thing is that because these Vine videos loop, Michele, you've probably noticed, people have compared them really to animated GIFs, haven't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. The animated GIFs, they really took off in the last couple of years. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, it's really weird. I mean, animated GIFs, it makes me think like 1996 or something.
Yeah, but they're back.
Back with a force. Yeah. I mean,
you know, they've been kind of tied in with the whole lolcats and the captions and all of that as well. I've seen a lot of stuff, certainly in terms of fan sites related to TV shows and stuff like that. You'll see, for example, a whole comic strip made of animated GIFs or GIFs or whatever you want to call them, along with the actual text or the dialogue from whatever the show is. It's the new thing. It's the new meme, Michele. But Vine, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. We'll come back to it maybe in a couple of months. But what I am excited about, Michele, and seriously impressed about, I've told you before how my wife and I signed up for Netflix when it became available. It's just, 13 months ago, in fact, January of 2012, when Netflix came to the UK and Ireland. And we've been delighted with it. We've binged on entire series. We've watched, you know, some quality TV drama and sort of, the Showtime and HBO type stuff in particular. I think I mentioned to you, we watched 5 seasons of Weeds on it last year and absolutely loved it. And
talk to me about your new addiction.
Well, the new addiction. Well, it's not an addiction anymore because we watched the final episode last night, House of Cards, Michele. As you know, it's a real step forward for Netflix. In fact, in terms of the fact that they've gone the way of HBO and Showtime and these kinds of channels in the States and commissioned their own original content. And what content they got, directed by David Fincher, executive producer Kevin Spacey, starring Kevin Spacey, based on the original series House of Cards in the UK. Do you remember this this British TV series, Michele?
No, I never actually saw it, but I mean, I read about it, but I've never seen it.
I had seen it, and I'd never actually seen the full series, but I'd seen perhaps one or two episodes here and there. In fact, there were miniseries. I think there may have been three miniseries made of them, of literally a ruthless politician who climbs his way to being Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, ends up in a showdown, in fact, with the monarch, who in that fictitious universe, I think, is a king rather than a queen. Fierce, fantastic drama altogether. Really brilliant stuff. But the Kevin Spacey version, which is transposed, if you like, from Westminster to Capitol Hill in Washington. He's a congressman. He's the majority whip. And it is just fantastic stuff. If you like, I don't know, do you like US political drama, The West Wing?
Oh, I do. I mean, I watched the first episode. I haven't actually had a chance to sit down and watch the rest of it.
What did you think?
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, it's at the same kind of quality as you get from, you know, the HBO type dramas that we've had, or Stars, or any of those other, you know, really big, high quality productions, wonderful cast. Everything about it, I mean, the production quality is fantastic. Mm.
Have you seen much in terms of the critical analysis of it? Obviously, one of the problems with this kind of thing, they bring it all out at once because it suits people to devote a weekend or to watch it in your own pace. Some people watched it all the first weekend. It took us 2 weeks to watch it, to see all 13 episodes. And, of course, one of the problems with that is you want to avoid spoilers.
Well, yeah, which is a bit awkward because, of course, you know, within 24 hours of them making it available, I mean, media members of the media had been given access to the first couple of episodes a few days in advance, but, you know, nobody had access to the full series. And some people were given the task of watching the entire thing in order to review it. Mm. So within 24 hours or so of it being made available, some people had actually watched the entire series and were writing about it. So I suppose, you know, there is that kind of spoiler thing, but at the same time, it's like when you buy a box set. Mm. You know, you have the entire box set. You're able to watch the entire series end to end, and, you know, you don't have to wait for next week or the week after or whatever. You don't have to worry about these kind of mid-season hiatus things that a lot of the American series have. You know, you're able to get instant satisfaction.
I'm going to post a few links, Michele, related to this because I've enjoyed it so much, and I'm also really interested, as you say, in the whole what this means for media, what this means for entertainment. It's a new form, really. It's like, you know, it's as people point out, it's more like the movies. It's more like a novel in some ways. In one review I was reading of this, somebody pointed out the fact that once upon a time novels were serialized. The likes of Charles Dickens published some of his classics over several weeks. They were serialized in magazines and periodicals, whereas then we moved on to getting novels published all in one go, and, you know, it depended how fast you could read that. We've been used to TV shows being serialized, and now we're getting them all in one go. You can read it, consume it, in this case, as fast as you like or otherwise. There's two links I'm going to post along with the podcast. One is from Business Insider. The other is it's a story on this in relation to this from the Telegraph newspaper. House of Cards is the headline. Netflix's experiment in binging pays off. And the Business Insider article headline is, not even Kevin Spacey knows the ratings for House of Cards. It's an interesting article pointing out the fact that apparently Netflix are chuffed to bits with the first of all with the actual ratings for this, and secondly with the actual kind of data that they're getting. Because if you think about it, Michele, where people pause, what people rewind, what people choose to highlight and watch again, this is the kind of information that in general TV producers never know about the content they produce. They're already working on series two of House of Cards, and they've got some amazing data, unprecedented data, really, from the point of view of content creators that they can use. But they're not sharing it. The reason they're not sharing it, there's a man here, what's his name? Netflix Chief Content Officer, a man called Ted Sarandos. He's quoted in the Business Insider article. He says, we're not going to tell you the ratings. He's refused to divulge them because he said it's an apples to orange comparison with TV network ratings. And he says, if I come out to you and say that we attracted more viewers than a show on another network, then that's bad news for them and not particularly good news for me, he said, because I don't monetize it in any way. I don't sell advertising. I'm not jockeying for a position with cable operators, he says. But I'll tell you something, they're not selling advertising, Michele, but you mightn't have noticed this in series one, but by the time you get, or in episode one, by the time you get to episode about five or six, you'll start to notice the product placement.
Right.
And guess what logo is particularly prominent?
I've no idea.
There's a Mac on every desk, Michele, and there's an iPhone in every pocket. Let me put it to you that way. And you start to notice it after a few episodes. I remember watching Fringe a year or two ago, and it being particularly noteworthy that they were using, they were all using Android devices, Android phones at the time. But definitely you notice the Apple product placement. And there's probably some stuff that's more subtle as well in there as well. But you've enjoyed episode one anyway so far in terms of what you've seen.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, it's one that, you know, I will sit down and I will watch the rest of that season. And you, I don't know if you heard as well, Colin, that they're teaming up with DreamWorks to do an original series for kids.
I didn't hear that, no, but I'm not surprised because it's another thing that's happened in our house, in our experience. As you know, my kids are 8, 7, and 6, and they now control Netflix in our house. Since Serviu came in, I think I said to you before, we now have a PC with a fairly large screen in the sitting room instead of a television, and they go to Netflix now in preference over the TV. There's a TV. We have Serviu on the same PC, but they don't use it at all. And they've been watching stuff on Netflix wholesale for the last several weeks. So what's the story with the DreamWorks? Do we know any more about that?
Well, I'm on their press list these days, so I get all their releases. I mean, see, they're calling it Turbo Fast Action Stunt Team. It sounds like it's about an ordinary sail who dares to dream big and fast. After a freak accident, miraculously gives him the power of super speed, Turbo kicks his dreaming into overdrive and embarks on an extraordinary journey to achieve the seemingly impossible, competing in the Indianapolis 500.
Oh, I've got three people who are going to watch that without a doubt.
And it's got the voice talent of Ryan Reynolds, Paul Giamatti, Michael Peña, Luis Guzman, and a bunch of others. But I'm a bit confused, actually. Hold on, I'm rereading that. I misread that completely. Sorry, they've a film out in the summer called Turbo, which features all that voice talent, but Turbo Fast is going to be based on the film. Sorry.
Okay.
My bad.
No worries. It's the first of many, whether it's for kids or for adults, Michele. I'm already looking forward to the second series of House of Cards, and no doubt we're going to see more quality drama as well coming from Netflix. And being licensed, I think, to Netflix as well, it's going to be worth people's while. Interesting that they, I don't know if it's still available, but they made episode one of House of Cards available free to non-subscribers, hoping that people would be hooked. Do you think they will be? Would you pay €7 to sign up and watch the rest of the series if you hadn't done so already, Michele?
Probably. I mean, you know, the thing about it is, I mean, the way Netflix works, you can sign up for a month. There's no long-term contracts. You're not tied into anything. So, you know, you sign up for a month. If you don't like it, you cancel your subscription.
Absolutely.
So there's the one of the problems with the loss of the other. I won't say the other cable ones, because I mean Netflix obviously isn't the same. But you know, when you're dealing with Sky or any of the other companies, be it in Ireland or elsewhere, you know, they want you to sign up for a year. They want you to sign up for a longer period. They want to have a user that they're going to retain for, you know, 12 months or more. Whereas with a lot of these things like, you know, Netflix, Hulu Plus, you can do it on a month-by-month basis. There's no obligation for you to stay longer than a month. It's pay-per-view. It's you're watching stuff, you know, pretty much on demand. Mm. And as you said, you know, they have a huge amount of data available. They know what people watch. They know what shows are actually popular. Not, you know, there's no more do you have to rely on kind of wishy-washy statistics about what people may or may not actually be watching actively. I mean, if the television's on, doesn't mean people are actually watching it. Whereas with Netflix, I would suspect that if something is on Netflix, it's because somebody is watching it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's interesting. I mean, the biggest challenge, I think, in fairness to Netflix, remains, Michele, the lack of content or the lack of choice or the lack of quality material which is being licensed to them. And I'd certainly find it more attractive, I think, if I was in the United States. There's definitely more of a choice than we have here. But leaving all that aside, Michele, it's still a good deal at €7 a month. And as I said to you before, it is now the only thing that we subscribe to. We've got rid of Sky. We've got rid of other things like that. And it's certainly worth paying for. The only problem happened to us last night, Michele. It became a ritual here over the last week, catching up on the last six or seven episodes of House of Cards. And last night we had an episode and a half to go, and we got the kids off to bed, settled ourselves down in front of the fire, and we were getting into the last few minutes of, I suppose we had about 20 minutes of the second last episode to watch, when everything completely ground to a halt, and I couldn't get my DSL to work. Internet, broadband went down kaput. So I phoned Aircom then. 20 past 10 this happened, only to be told that there was nobody on and it had gone down. Their office had closed at, or their support had closed at 10 o'clock. Now I rigged something up, Michele. We got to watch it last night. I rigged something up with a portable Wi-Fi hotspot on the mobile phone, using my 3G or my HSDPA connection. And we got to watch it last night. Phoned up Aircom this morning, only to be told that they had upgraded our exchange at around that time last night, and loads of people in our areas had trouble, and this is what had happened. And they fixed it for me in a matter of 5 seconds while I was talking to them on the phone. I said to the man from Aircom this morning, I said, "Do you realise we were watching the very last episode of House of Cards?" So he and I had a laugh about that. But you don't get that, or that isn't going to happen, you know, with traditional network TV.
No, I mean it's different. I mean it's a very different way of watching things. But I mean, you know, it's something I've been doing to a greater or lesser extent with, you know, with certain TV show box sets. I mean, rather than watching, you know, individual episodes of something like, say, Dexter, I would watch an entire series. And I think 24 was the first one. Where that really came to the fore. I mean, the idea of, you know, watching an entire series almost in one go. I mean, we've had a couple of family Christmases where myself, the mother and the sister are being kind of glued to a 24 series over the course of several days.
That's fun. It's good. It's a new way to watch TV.
Yeah, and I think either the television companies realise that this is the way things are moving, or they're going to get left behind. I mean, you know, Netflix is in a position now where they can afford to produce their own content. And I can't see them stopping. I mean, why would they?
Well, Michele, hopefully we won't be stopping either. We'll pick things up again where we left off and continue again next week. Thanks again for joining us this week on the podcast. Talk to you soon.
Thanks. Good night.